Blog Talk Radio.
To take life for granted, our own lives and the lives of those we care about. But for too many of us, the life we have known can be shattered unexpectedly in an instant. Today I'm speaking with a mother who experienced the worst nightmare a parent can endure. If you are struggling with someone you love, maybe her poignant story will give you some hope and lasting courage. Stay tuned. Welcome to my radio show. I'm your host, Dr. Erica Goodstone, licensed mental health counselor, healing through love relationship healer, somatic body psychotherapist, and health and wellness coach, helping men and women heal their bodies and their relationships through love. Author of the Love Me, Touch Me, Heal Me book series, the romantic novel Love in the Blizzard of Life, and the powerful Love Lessons for Your Soul, which I teach a few times a year, that can really change your love life. This show is all about living your dreams, fulfilling your life purpose, and creating and sustaining love and health and total well-being for the rest of your life, no matter what age you are right now. In every episode, I speak with vibrant, exciting, and positive men and women who keep proving that life can and often does get better and better, no matter what has happened in our life, as we reach our 30s, 40s, 50s, 60s, 70s, and beyond. Today, I am really delighted to speak with Anne Marie Hoare. Hope I'm saying your name correctly. She met her husband at age 15. They moved in together sometime after college, and they married 5 years later and traveled around Thailand and Australia and returned pregnant with Marley. And then later her second son, Archie, and later her daughter, Annabelle. She was very happy as a mom and a childminder to many local families, and so proud of her son as he went off to the university in Brighton, England. She had a beautiful life and a loving family, but her son returned ill, and she created a WhatsApp group called Big Love that gave her worldwide support through those final dark hospital and hospice days. Her book, Marley's Way, is a celebration of her beautiful son and of all the people coming together to support others. Not only those that have supported her, but people who've supported others too. So I am delighted to welcome you, Anne Marie.
Well, thank you very much for having me on.
Yes, so I would love you to begin by telling us a little of the beautiful story of how you met your husband and you traveled together and then you had a son and you had other children, and just describe your life before what happened and then tell us what happened.
When most of our friends were settling down and buying houses, my husband and I decided to go traveling to visit his family in Australia. And we had a wonderful 2 years traveling around, making lots of friends. And we'd been together about 5 years and we didn't think we could have children. And then when we came home, we were planning our next trip across America. And I fell pregnant with Marley, and I was very happy, really happy, great pregnancy. really enjoyed motherhood, and my husband was very happy in fatherhood, and we just went along our business doing things in our community and helping who we could, and I started helping at the local mother and toddler group, helping other young mums, and then my son Archie came along, and then my daughter Annabelle, which was quite a surprise. She was our grand finale 6 years after my son. But I really enjoyed all of the aspects of parenthood, of helping at the school, the local church. I've always enjoyed working with children, and so I found I was completely fulfilled in that. And as Marley grew up, you never stop worrying about your kids, but he knew what he wanted to do. He wanted to do music. He was a music producer, so went down to the university in Brighton and worked exceptionally hard, and I thought he was doing really, really well. And after 3 years, He got his degree, and I went down with his friends and his brother to celebrate. And he looked great. You know, as you look at your kids, you sort of quietly look them up and down and make sure that they look all right. And then it was literally a few months later, I got a call saying, "Mum, there's something not right. I've got earache. My stomach's hurting. I've got constipation." And he'd been backwards and forwards to the doctor and wasn't very, he didn't have a lot of faith in the doctors there. And he said, "Mum, I want to come home. I want to see my family doctor." I said, "Great, come home." And when he came home, I opened the door, and when I saw him, I was so shocked, but I held it inside. But his little sister, as little sisters do, just took one look at him and said, "Oh my God, I can see your ribs. You look terrible." And so we went to his local, you know, the Marley was born with NF1, which is neurofibromatosis, and we didn't know he had this ailment until he was 12. He was being signed off for asthma, and the doctor was checking him out and said, "Yeah, he hasn't got asthma, but he's got these birthmarks under his arms, basically where the sun doesn't shine. I think he has NF1. And we were like, what the hell's that? So we went to the geneticist, and he had lots of tests done, and it was properly diagnosed through an eye examination. Now, the doctors and everyone said to us, "Listen, there's some kids that are in hospital all the time with NF1. Some kids, they're absolutely fine, and all they have is these birthmarks." So basically, I didn't really know what to do. And I told, you know, my family, "Look, he's got NF1. And it turned out my auntie, who I don't really see very much, but all four of her children had NF1. And they'd had basically neurofibromatosis, these little tiny tumors that grow at the end of nerves. And my cousins had where it causes a problem is if the tumor grows where they can't cut it. So my cousins had tumours like at the end of their optic nerve, but they were fine, and they all went through university. None of them had any problems. So I didn't really know what to do, but I Googled it, and my sister said, "You better check this out, because, you know, some people are, you know, they're really bad with it." And so I did look on Google, and I was very shocked by the pictures of the images that came up with people with lots of tumours all over them. And so I decided to not look anymore. I decided to cross each bridge when I came to it. And as Marley had no other symptoms or anything, it was fine. So, you know, it was in the back of my mind. I didn't really think about NF1 when he came back ill. I really didn't. I thought he was suffering from maybe anorexia nervosa, maybe stress, depression. And so that's what I was looking up. I was Googling everything while we were waiting for different tests. And he was really sick and really tired all the time. And I just didn't think it was cancer at all. But it was an X-ray, actually. My husband took him to the doctor had done loads of different tests. And then it was just on the final sort of going back, he'd had a slight cough. Now, I'm not talking like a hacking smoker's cough. It was just a a little cough, but it was like constant, but not enough for it to be alarming. And so he said, I tell you what, I'm going to send you off for an x-ray. And it was the x-ray that saw this quite a huge tumor on his vagus nerve in his neck. And so that was the beginning of this huge panic stations, really, of what the hell's going on. So then we had to wait for more tests, biopsies that were quite horrific. But they the hospital that is near us is called Addenbrookes, and it's a training hospital. And I really feel it's one of the best hospitals in Europe. It's fantastic. They're so thorough and they're so brilliant. And when we were told we had to go to the sarcoma unit, we were like, here we go, this is it then. And I'd already had a chat with Marley, and he had sat me down one day and he said, Mum, I always thought that I would have some rare disease. And I was like, well, okay, but we don't know what it is yet, you know? Let's just cross each bridge when we come to it. But going in through this sarcoma unit into the waiting room, which was massive. It was so big, and it's a whole different world. And when you land in cancer land, it's, you don't know any of the language. I didn't even know what curative was or palatable was or anything. So it was about that time Marley said, Mum, if it is cancer, I'm not doing chemo, I'm not doing radiotherapy. And I said, good, because we had watched one of my best friends previously when Molly was a child. She had skin cancer in her mouth, and she did radiotherapy, and she did lots of other things, and we watched her suffer. And then we had Molly's auntie Joy. She had breast cancer, and that they cut away. And then she had ovarian cancer, and 10 years of rounds of chemo, radiotherapy, just really awful symptoms and side effects from the drugs. And Marley was very clear. And I said, okay, so if you're not going to, you're not going to do conventional treatment, what are you going to do? What's the plan? And we were completely supportive of my son, my husband, all of us. We're like, okay, fair enough. What are you going to do? So that's when he started researching. Well, I researched for him. He was so tired with this great big tumor in him that he would lie on my lap, or I would be massaging his feet to help ease his symptoms, and be researching the whole time. And it was at that time my sister Claire said, hey, listen, I've heard of this guy called Crispy Cancer. He's an American, and he's healed himself from cancer, and he's got, you know, YouTube videos. So I was like, okay, let's find out about this guy. And when I put Crispy Cancer into Google, it came up with a critique. This surgeon had blasted Chris Wark and said basically that the surgery healed Chris Wark, nothing else had. And I was like, okay, well, that's good to know. But then I went on to look at all Chris Wark's stuff, and it was amazing. And for someone who makes a choice not to do chemo or radiotherapy, Chris Wark was the best news ever, because he was so hopeful. His videos are so brilliant. He's so down to earth. And it was easy to watch and easy to understand. And it took away the panic and the fear of the word cancer. So then we just started researching more and more. Marley then was booked in down in London to have the surgery to remove the tumour. Now, the tumour was wrapped around Marley's vagus nerve. Another thing we had to research, because I hadn't got a clue about the vagus nerve, but it's a hugely important nerve that runs from the brain all the way through down to the stomach. So it affects speech, digestion, so much. And this tumour was wrapped around it. So we went down to London, and there was a comedy of errors almost to, which was a positive effect for us, because every time there was a delay because bloods weren't ready or Marley wasn't quite well enough to have the operation, we were researching the whole time. So we had now a really good, clear path which way we were going to do. And Marley changed his diet whilst in hospital. And we were able, some friends gave us some money, and we had enough money to go around the corner to see Dr. Zandra Williams. Now, she's a nutritionist, and she's an Australian lady, and she had lots of published papers. Marley didn't want to see anyone who didn't have published papers. He didn't want to even acknowledge anything unless it had science-based evidence. So I took him round in a cab to see Zandra Williams before the operation. Now, I don't know how we did it really, because he was very weak and very ill, but we got round and we saw this wonderful eccentric lady in her house in Chelsea. And again, she was like Chris Watts. She was like, you know, don't be afraid. Yes, of course it can be done. This, you know, and gave us some guidance to find our own path. And so Marley made his own protocols based on other people's that he felt would be helpful. While we were in talking to Dr. Williams, we went downstairs to pick up some supplements, and Marley just had this huge pain in his head, and we had to sit down on the stairs and wait for it to pass. But I didn't know it was going to pass. All I could see was my son in this terrible pain. But it did pass after a few minutes, and he looked at me and he said, "Mum, it's the tumour, it's pressing on the nerve, and that pain was like someone stabbing me in the head with a knife." And I was so shocked, and I felt so sorry for my son. I got him back to the hospital straight away, and I was relieved to get him back to the hospital. Now, he had the operation, took 6 hours. We had a fantastic surgeon called Miss Began, who I still speak with now. Her team were amazing. They had such a hard job. They had to get this tumour off the vagus nerve without damaging the vagus nerve, because he could have been ended up without the power of speech, without being able to digest again. And they did it. After 6 hours, they managed to get it, and it ruptured. Now, it ruptured as they took it out, which meant that there was a lot of cancer cells there, you know, but we were so positive the whole time that we just crossed each bridge when we came to it. And so, okay, it ruptured, but Marley had a plan. He cut out all sugar from his diet. We changed everything. I mean, because he hadn't eaten for so long, because his digestion was being affected by the tumor. Now the tumour was gone, he was hungry and he loved food. So I was bringing into the hospital special cold-pressed green juices, as much raw food as I could get down him, and he was eating a lot and he felt wonderful. As soon as that tumour was out, he had this new lease of life. Literally within half an hour of coming out of theatre, he put the thumbs up, he was covered in wires. It was a long process for him to get out of hospital, but it was amazingly quick, really, if you think about what he had done. But he was determined to get exercising straight away. He was still on morphine when he came home a week or so later. So he came home, but he had a plan, and as well as juicing, changing to 85% raw food, water with limes cut in it. He wanted to make his body at least inhospitable to the cancer for returning. He detoxed, he did enemas. We had, you know, spreadsheets of what he was going to do. And it was a holistic approach. It was, he'd already started doing things he'd never done before, things like acupuncture, which really helped. Before he had the tumour removed, the acupuncture really helped his symptoms. I'd drop him off and he'd go in with his shoulders down, you know, really sick, and then he'd come out as Marley again. And it didn't last, but to see him smiling and be, you know, I saw how acupuncture worked for him. And reflexology, another thing that really helped his symptoms, that really comforted him and helped him. And we'd never done these things before. So it was all learning new things. And I could see with my eyes how much he benefited from these different holistic things. Now, Marley went on to do really good exercise program. He joined CrossFit. He was doing yoga. Wow. He was starting to do meditation, all these things he'd never done before. He changed his whole life within that year. And he was so amazingly strong. And he had one... he had to go back for our oncologist was really special, Dr. Wong. Marley had to sort of fight to have his choice, but he said, listen, this is what I want to do. I don't want to do chemo. I don't want to do radiotherapy. I want to have surgery, but I want you to monitor me, please, to make sure I'm doing okay. And Dr. Wong said, okay. So he went back for CT scans. The first one he went back, so he had the operation in November, went back in April, and the cancer nurses that came in with the oncologist, now they were not as well trained as the oncologist. Dr. Wong was brilliant, and he said, listen, I think it might be recurring. I think it might be growing back. And I said, well, how do you know? Because there's no baseline scan after, after the actual operation. So Dr. Wong left it there. He also offered Marley proton therapy, which is another form of radiation. And they were going to, the NHS were going to pay for Marley to go to Florida to have this proton therapy. But Marley said, no, I'm going to do it my way, thank you. But could I have that money? Because I need loads of organic vegetables and acupuncture and other things. And unfortunately, Dr. Wong said, I'm so sorry, we can't give you the money we would have spent on proton therapy. But it was worth asking. So Marley was like, okay, so we've got to set back a little bit. So then he decided to try cannabis oil. So he kept hold of all of the things that he was doing, which was the exercise, nutrition, the supplements, the yoga, the meditation, and then he added the cannabis oil as well. So he'd take the cannabis oil in the morning he'd do everything he had to do in the morning and then take the cannabis oil, which, you know, obviously made him very, very tired. Then he went back in, I think it was the end of June, and it was clear. And Dr. Wong said, well, whatever you're doing, Marley, keep on doing it. And Marley was ecstatic. He was looking so good. And, don't forget that he'd been diagnosed, in the October. He had had the operation in November. So this was a good 6 months later. He hadn't had one illness in that time, not a cold. We'd all had flu. We'd had other illnesses, and Marley didn't get one in that whole time. He was strong as an ox. He was doing everything at CrossFit, which is, is a harsh form of training. It's amazing. Plus his trampolining. He was in really good shape. Then it was sort of the end of the next CT scan was at the end of August. And before that, Marley had noticed more tumours appearing on his stomach. He'd already had about 7 NF1 tumours, little ones. They look like peas under the skin. But he came down one morning and he showed me his stomach and he was concerned. And I said, I don't think these are cancer. I think these are NF1. So Dr. Wong had a look at them and he said, yeah, they're just NF1 bumps. And one came up on his head. And I really think, I wonder now if Marley had seen these tumours appearing and thought, even if I get rid of, this cancer this time, is it just going to always be a thing with me because I have NF1? Am I just going to have to, my whole life is going to be spent not just 2 years on, the anti-cancer diet and all of these things that Chris Watt promotes, the 2 years is the big number for a lot of people. Would Marley have to be on it forever to keep the cancer at bay? Now, also, he had another, when they took the tumour from Mali. They dissected it, and it was quite big. I think it was 11 centimetres. They dissected it. Now, the tumour was necrotic in the middle. So he'd had cancer for a long time. It had grown and then died. And then something very quickly made the cancer grow again. Now, it corresponded with him leaving university after many years of being at college and at uni and thinking, what am I going to do with most of my life? His relationship broke up. He had a girlfriend and that broke up. And I wonder if, you know, these things, you know, the stress of everything made the cancer suddenly grow, because when they took it out, like I said, it had necrotic inner and then this big growth spurt. So when they dissected it, not only, you know, inside was another rarer cancer called Triton. I looked up any survival cases of, you know, anyone who had Triton. And the only one we could find was a young man in some documents that had chemo, had radiation treatment, and died not a very pleasant death 7 years later. So, and that's the only case that we could find for a survivor of Triton. So Marley knew this, it was a very rare disease. But these words like rare, terminal, it didn't matter to us at the time, because we were just really positive about everything, that the course that he was going. But it was at the, it was in August. He was due to have a CT scan at the end of August. And around August, I thought, you know what? He's not as enthusiastic as he was. He's, you know, he's missing a bit of yoga. He's not going to CrossFit as much. The juices were really finding, he was finding it hard to swallow. And I just felt his mood had changed. Now, the vagus nerve affects mood. And if you look on Amazon, you'll find maybe 3 or 4 books now about the vagus nerve and how to stimulate it to bring happiness. It's that important for mood. And you can stimulate it by singing and other things. You know, it's very important. So, and laughing, that stimulates it. So this, you know, I think maybe the cancer was starting to grow back and maybe having an effect on the vagus nerve, which affected his mood and his positive spirit. So I could see him going downhill a bit, and we'd started to, when he had the end of August CT scan and Dr. Wong just said, I'm so sorry, Marley, it's growing back. Marley was very quiet in that meeting. He listened to what Dr. Wong said. And as we came out, he said, Mum, I want to go to Ibiza. I want to see my friends out there. And I said, okay. And he's, Mum, what if I die in Ibiza? And I said, if you die in Ibiza, Marley, it's a beautiful island. And, you know, we'll come out. No one's going to give you insurance because of the cancer. So we're not going to take out insurance. So we're just going to go like we always have, positively, and everything will be all right. Everything we need is always provided and it will be okay. So Marley flies out literally the next week. And I was glad, it sounds bad, but I was glad he did, because the week before that, after the CT scan, we weren't getting on. He was stressed. I was stressed. I just didn't know what else to do. And we were sort of just picking on each other, which was not like us at all. We really always got on really, really well. But I was stressed. I'd been tired for quite some time working, looking after the other kids. It was a lot. It was a lot for me to take on. And I remember getting so mad. We'd had an argument over the blue pancakes. I'd failed like 3 times to make these pancakes, and I'd had enough, and I went outside and he shouted at me, and I just walked off up the hill behind my house, and I walked up there all by myself, and I sat there and I cried and I cried and I shouted to God, God, what am I going to do? What shall I do? You know, he's not doing the protocols, he's not, you know, as keen. And it wasn't God's voice, but this resounding feeling that I got back, it was just do nothing. And I was like, well, that's the strangest thing. How can I not do nothing? You know, I'm his mum. But I just felt that it was, that's what I had to do. I had to accept what was going on. So Molly went off to Ibiza and we were texting backwards and forwards. And the person he stayed with, she was beautiful. And she sent me secret pictures of him so I knew he was okay. And then 4 days later, he said, Mum, I'm coming back. I've wasted some time. I've got a new plan. I want to come back. I'm enthusiastic. So Marley came back. But when he came back, he had some of the symptoms returning, the stomach aches, maybe a few headaches, and the tiredness and the insomnia. Sort of, you know, his sleep was all mixed up. So we'd had a remedy from our homeopath that had really helped, like get him to Ibiza and lift his spirit. And also he'd had a session with a spiritualist. I can't remember her full title, but he'd gone to see her. I thought he needed a huge lift to get him to Ibiza. He wanted to do it. I would have done anything to get him there, but he just needed a lift in his spirit. So we had a Skype interview with this like spiritualist woman, and it was really expensive. And afterwards I said, Marley, what did you think of that? And he said, well, oh, I don't know, Mum. And so I was thinking, well, that is a huge waste of money and time. But then he said later, actually, Mum, she was really patient and we did go through quite a lot of my emotions. And when I was stuck and I was frustrated, she was patient and we actually cleared some stuff. So that was, you know, it was worth it. And he did get to do what he wanted to do, which was go to Ibiza. He came home and then, like I said, we did the hyperbaric oxygen therapy, but that wasn't for him. It was very claustrophobic, really wasn't comfortable. And with all the things that he tried, it was probably only, you know, a couple of things that he tried and said, no, that's not for me. And I think with a lot of cancer healers, you have to go with your gut feeling, with what you feel is right and what you can't, you know, put yourself through. So he didn't want to do that. But it was that when he came back, he said, Mum, I don't know what I'm going to do because I need extra support and you're working. So, you know, I had many kids on my books. And so I phoned up all of my parents and I said, this is the situation. I need to help Marley. And every single one of the parents that I worked for said, sure, just take as much as you need. It's all going to be fine. Just do what you need to do. So when Marley came back, I was free. I didn't have to work. And I could run him around and do stuff. But it was very clear when he came back, he was not himself. Now, a while ago, connected to the hospital is a charity called Click Sergeant. Marley was the only person under the age of 25 in this whole massive area that had refused chemo and radiotherapy. Now, his key worker from Click Sergeant was called Tracy. She was amazing. When he was withdrawn and quiet, she was so patient with him. She kept saying, let's meet, Marley, let's meet. And he was, you know, quite stubborn. And then he'd go out with coffee, with Tracy for a coffee. And it was really nice for him to have a support person like that. Now, she helped him with finances. She helped him put his case together for the oncologist to say why he wasn't going to do radiotherapy and chemotherapy. She was his huge cheerleader, and we will never forget Tracy, and she's still a very good friend of ours today. She was amazing. Now, she just happened to pop in. She popped in for a cup of tea to see Marley, and she realized that we were in crisis. We were Marley's emotions. He was having panic attacks. This was just after he came home from Ibiza. Very quickly, he went downhill, and I hadn't got a clue what to do. Tracy came in. She saw we were in crisis, and she said, you know what? I think Marley needs to go and have some space at the hospice, get his symptoms under control, his digestion, his sleeping, and give him some space from you lot, because we are a working family. We're just as crazy as any other family, and he needed some space to think. So I'd had some dealings with the hospice. I knew what angels that they were, how amazing they helped my best friend, Joe. And so I didn't have any qualms about it at all. I I said, Marley, do you want to go? He said, yeah. His dad did not want him to go. His dad said, if he goes to the hospice, he's not coming out. And I was like, don't be crazy. He's just going in there for respite care. He's going to be fine. Now, we went in there, and it's a purpose-built hospice. It's brand new. It's amazing. And we walked in, and they said, you know what? It's actually quite quiet at the moment. So Marley can stay as long as he wants. Marley went into his room, which was beautiful, with it was very spacious. It had a little patio with a little bird feeder. And he said, Mum, I like it here. I'm going to be fine here. But I stayed with Marley, and very quickly, within 24 hours, I could see he was going downhill. But I didn't seem to know it at the time. I just went with the flow. That's how I did everything with Marley's journey. I just had to go with the flow and be as positive as possible.
Anne Marie, so, we're kind of running. I have to stop you here. We're kind of running out of time. So I would love you to just share, what have you learned from all of this that could help other people going through something similar who may not want to take a traditional route?
I would say, if you get a cancer diagnosis, research, research, research. Get yourself a really good team. Get oncologists that are on board, and get online and find Chris Wark, find the support group. The modules, the Square One modules, are fantastic. And what I did, I made up a WhatsApp group of all my friends and family. There's 50 people on there. And every day from the time of his diagnosis, they supported me with love and pictures and poems and quotes. And they kept me afloat. They literally carried me through, and we're still on there now. And it brings people together. And Big Love is what the WhatsApp group was named. They still support me today. They help me with the soup kitchen to raise money for the hospice. They're always there. And the incredible kindness of people, of even strangers in the hospital, amazing. So that's what I've learned, how wonderful people are, supporting each other and helping each other in the worst situations. And I love people.
And have you or Marley ever regretted not doing chemo and radiation?
Never. He said while he was in the hospice, I've had a brilliant year. I've had a great year. And most days when we were driving about, he'd grab my hand in the car and he'd say, Mum, I've had a good day today. And he didn't regret any of it. And on the day that he died, the oncologist came to see Marley and he almost bowed to Marley. It was a very incredible, surreal scene. And the oncologist apologized for not being able to help Marley more. Marley was like a serene Buddha in that hospice. He was amazing. He was only in the hospice for 4 days. He actually died very healthy, apart from that tumor on his vagus nerve, and he died happy. He felt God was around him, whereas he'd never been a spiritual person. Well, not spiritual. He'd never believed so much before. But in those last few days, everything turned around and God was with him. You could see it in the photos that are in the book. You can see the light that's emanating from him. And he looks strong and it's amazing. I'm not sure why this has happened to our family. But, it was his destiny to die young. And we miss him every single day. But he died a happier person, if you know what I mean, from the year previously. He didn't heal his cancer, but he healed his life.
I've heard that many times. And one of the things that I'm hearing that he did is that he made his own decision. He felt empowered. He didn't just give his life over to a doctor or to anyone.
That's absolutely right. And by making that decision and taking control and taking responsibility, that really did help him. make his decisions and go forward in a positive way, which was a far different journey from his Auntie Joy and my best friend Joe. You know, their lives, they got onto the cancer conveyor belt and it didn't go well.
Right, and I have a few friends and lots of family members that have died that way. So I know, personally.
Yeah.
So now please share with us your book and how will people be able to get it when it comes out?
Well, I'm really hoping to release it on Friday, on Valentine's Day, because ultimately the book is about love. It's about Marty's love for himself, my love for my son, our family, the WhatsApp group Big Love, who carried us through. So I thought it was an appropriate day. So I'm just finishing the last tiny bits to get it out there on Amazon. It's called Marley's Way, and it started off as a mother's diary. I wanted Marley to have a diary of the protocols he was doing to see if they were working, how he felt. And then it turned into something else. It turned into a cathartic act for me to have something to do so I didn't go mad. And then it turned into a book on grief, and because I don't know, people who are around me on Big Love know that positive throughout. And I did have dark days, but they were there with me and they lifted me out. It didn't stay long, you know, that dark time of worry or whatever, it didn't stay long. But now in my grief and in my family's grief, we're all in here together. So, you know, we have that with my daughter, my other son, my husband, all of our extended family, we're all together.
But I'm hearing that it was not just your family that you leaned on for support. It's the community of caring people around.
Yes, and we were just, my mantra has always been, a long time ago, I picked up a book when I was in Australia called You Can Heal Your Life by Louise Hay. And that has been my go-to book, any crisis or any problem in my life. My mum gave me an amazing emotional toolbox to get on with stuff when terrible things happened. So this was just one of the worst things to happen, but I had that toolbox to help me cope, to help me do the best for my son, to support him and be as positive as I could through his journey and now in the grief of our family. So Louise Hayes, you know, my mantra, and even the kids I look after, they say, we're always in the right place at the right time. And these are like 5 and 6-year-olds. Because I tell them, you know, and my daughter and my son, we're always in the right place at the right time. So, you know,
and
we were.
I want to share, we're finishing. What I love about what you're saying is that you also are taking care of yourself. You're surrounded with love. You're not just draining yourself, loving others, but you're receiving the support.
That's right, because I think the meaning of life is to serve others, but you can't serve others if you don't look after yourself. So I do look after myself, and I do let myself have times where I want to cry, where I want to be angry, have all of my emotions, but I take care of myself. And, you know, people like Louise Hayes and, you know, my belief help me keep positive, to be good company around and to do the best I can.
Well, I want to thank you, Anne-Marie Hawari, for spending this time with me. Your story is beautiful. And I can't wait to share it with lots of people because it can help so many people. And a lot of us need that help and support. So
thank you, Erica.
Look for Marley's Way. Thank you. And look for Marley's Way on Amazon. It will be out there in a few days.
That's right, Erica.
And Anne-Marie, I look forward to connecting to you again soon.
I hope so. Thank you so much.
And to those of you listening, check out my website, drericagoodstone.com, for upcoming events and other free items. Bye for now.